This is Sierra O'Donnell with Municipal Sustainable Energy Forum. Today's discussion is talking about a community in Half Moon Bay, California, that's trying to work on a design for a community solar spine, so to speak, between a row of houses. So our presenter today is Ronaldo Vasilic. Okay, I had it before. Vasilica, from Case for Good, an architect over in that area who's been working on this for a while. So go ahead, Ronaldo, why don't you go ahead and talk about what you want to do and what you'd like to hear from the panel here. What feedback would you like?
Certainly. Thank you so much, Sierra. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, loud and clear. All good.
Uh-huh. Good. Good. Well, thank you so much. I just moved here to Half Moon Bay in about 2 years ago, but I've been working on different solar systems for schools, for office complexes, for many, many years. And so when I arrived here, we had an interesting event happen. PG&E turned the power off when they were having issues with power lines and fires. And so our whole community blacked out except for my house. And I happened to have a solar system and a battery backup. So ours was the only house illuminated for quite a ways here. And I felt, wow, this is interesting. Why are we doing this and why is this happening? And I really saw an opportunity to fix it in some way by encouraging people to have solar and battery. Because Half Moon Bay is isolated. Half Moon Bay is subject to both earthquakes and tsunamis and fires in the hills surrounding it, and has limited access in and out. In the event of a major fire or earthquake, we'll probably be the last ones to hear from any of the adjoining over-the-hill communities, because they have more people, more issues, and probably will be left quietly alone until we help ourselves. So we've been talking with a number of local residents and helping them get solar systems in their homes so they could at least have their own power. And I'm also a member of a group called Coastside CERT, which is a community emergency response team. And so we've been talking about what can be done in the event of emergencies. The number of backup systems in the neighborhood and in the neighborhoods in Half Moon Bay are limited, very limited. So fire station may have a backup generator, but the housing doesn't, most houses don't. So the idea of coming up with solutions over time that could be accomplished in a small but creative way popped up in several times. So I started thinking about how can we do this in a neighborhood, block by block, microgrid way. I've worked in the past with large clients, putting up solar farms and systems and dealing with PG&E. And I had a client, in fact, on an Indian reservation in Sonoma that went through a design effort to build a solar farm. But PG&E had no infrastructure to that area that could carry all that power to the marketplace. And they were looking to make some money off of that as well as supply their community. The answer was you have to deal with PG&E, and PG&E has to have a transmission system that can take your power to the market. So backing off of that experience, I thought it might be better and faster and easier just to work from the local level on an individual house-by-house basis and work your way up into the point where you have enough power to put into the grid if you wanted to make money. But in the most simple solution would be just to have enough power to get you through those emergencies and have enough power not to have to lose food, lose medicine, lose lighting and heat at times of disasters, and therefore microgrids that would accommodate a block of people, say 20 houses, would be an ideal solution that could be accomplished all behind the meter without much interference from the bureaucracies that we have to deal with on a daily basis. So I came back to that solution and came up with, well, how do we do it locally? We could put the solar on every house and a battery in every garage and solve the problem that way. Not all homeowners can afford it sometimes or can actually, especially in this neighborhood, we have such a mixed group of people living here. Not all can afford it, but certainly some could afford it and allow it to be used by others in case of an emergency. Right now, people who have a generator will take that power cord and share it with somebody else across the fence when the emergency happens. It's a very collaborative group of neighbors. But if we could do it more systematically, putting it across property lines, have it internal in the event of emergencies, but give people enough power to operate during that emergency, we'd have a microgrid that was beneficial. So that is where I started. I looked at several options, and the one that seems to make the most sense is putting it across a spine, if you will, between property owners, so that it's aligned from beginning of block to the end of block, and everybody would have access to the spine. How it's designed, it can vary. You can put the power and conduit above 8 feet and or below grade and have everybody access it in some way. You could also consolidate batteries so that not every house needs to have one, but a collective group of batteries could be installed. So integrating it would be not difficult at all, but it does require cooperation. And this would be, in my mind, the simplest way to do it without having to reinvent distribution lines or eliminate the distribution lines and leaving PG&E alone to do their work. So this is exactly what's happening now, but it's on a random basis. And to have it more integrated will require work. So I'm looking for ideas and ways that maybe nonprofits can finance these kinds of solutions and let the property owners pay for them over time through their taxes or other methods that would allow them to be able to have the system without having to pay more than they can afford in order to do it. So that's my general approach, ground up, simple approach to the bigger issues of all the various methods that have been discussed over time and how to do it from the top down.
All right. I'm going to, no, we're all good. Yes, we can definitely hear you. So
okay.
This is a new technology, and anybody, we have a panel, and some of the folks on the panel I see are actually on the call. I have a couple questions. Who's the 202-277-4243 number? And anybody that wants to speak, please do a 4 and then a star on your phone, and that will unmute your line. So it's 202-277-4243. Who is that person?
Hey, Sierra. It's Patrick Moran.
Well, I thought it might be you, but I wasn't sure. Okay, super. Okay. Glad you could join us, Patrick. And then there's another number I'm not familiar with, 805-350-2931. Who's that? Do a star 4, unmute your line.
Hey, Sierra, this is Craig Lewis. I've got a couple of people who are from the Clean Coalition who I've asked to dial in because this is very relevant to so much of what the Clean Coalition is working on. And so anyway, I've got a couple of team members with some numbers that you probably don't recognize, and they're all 805.
Okay. No, that's just fine. I appreciate that you actually brought them along. So, Larissa, is that you on 703? I have a 703 number, 989-7639. Anybody? All right. Well, I will, don't forget to do a 4-star to unmute it then to talk. I know it's a little different, but it's a little more manageable this way. All right. Well, go ahead. We have some folks on the panel. Craig, do you want to start out? I know Jeff and Artie are on the panel as well. So,
sure.
Craig,
yeah,
do you want to make some comments and thoughts about this?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is Craig Lewis. I'm the executive director of the Clean Coalition. And Ronaldo, my only disappointment in all of this is that you have moved from Southern California to Northern. Why didn't you move yourself to Santa Barbara? I would love to be really partnering with you deeply on this type of initiative. I've read your materials, and you know, you indicated that what you're doing is a little bit simpler than what the Clean Coalition is doing. But the reality is that the Clean Coalition is doing exactly what you're doing as part of the bigger, you know, grander ambitions that we have. So, you know, the Clean Coalition indeed is looking at you know, very, you know, grid scale, you know, across an entire, you know, substation grid area. So this would be, you know, many square miles of grid area, you know, involving up to thousands of utility customers. And so, yes, we are doing community microgrids, but we are also doing, you know, straightforward solar microgrids, which are behind the meter. I think that's largely the back, you know, the basis of what you're talking about, with the potential additional feature of allowing for, you know, neighbors to share energy with each other. And so, you know, I'll just, you know, let you know that the Clean Coalition has a number of initiatives ranging from the broadest scale, the Goleta Load Pocket Community Microgrid, which is the entire Santa Barbara region, to the Santa Barbara Unified School District, where we're doing solar microgrids behind the meters of about 15 school sites and their centralized refrigeration warehouse where they do, you know, they store all their food, millions of dollars of food, by the way. And then they have, we're doing a residential scale solar microgrid as exactly what you're talking about, as a showcase for, you know, homeowners throughout the community and way beyond. And then, you know, you may be familiar with the Redwood Coast Airport microgrid. That's up in Humboldt at the airport, right? That is exactly along a feeder. It's utilizing the feeder line, so it's different than what you want to do. You want to have private tie lines between neighbors, which is indeed probably easier, but there are some gotchas, right, in order to do that. And then the Clean Coalition has the North Bay Community Resilience Initiative, which is very much focused on rebuilding the North Bay counties correctly, right, with solar microgrids and with the ability to eventually tie into broader community microgrids, you know, once they arrive. So with all that backdrop, I will say that the challenge that you're going to face is not doing solar microgrids behind every individual's meter. That's easy, right? You can go and you've already done that on your home, it sounds like, and it sounds like you've got a dozen or so neighbors to do that as well. So that's all doable. I think it'd be interesting to hear about, you know, how yours is configured and how much resilience it provides to you. But the where you start getting into sticky issues is where you're going to tie neighbors together. And there is an allowance. So people talk about the rule 218, where you're not allowed to tie neighbors together. That's not true. You are allowed to tie one neighbor. You know, you're allowed to tie two adjacent neighbors together, as long as there's no public right of way in between, and as long as you're not shipping any energy that originated on the grid, because then you would be a reseller. But here's the good news: if you've configured your solar microgrid correctly, which means you get the tax benefits on the battery, that means that you are charging your battery 100% from the solar, which means it's all originated. All that energy that ever transfers out of the battery is originated behind the meter, did not originate on the grid, cannot originate on the grid the way it should be configured. So you are allowed to ship that over the fence, right? As long as it's adjacent neighbors, no public right-of-way in between. So I think you're in really good shape to tie neighbors together, as long as you meet those requirements that I just mentioned. With that, I'll let others chime in.
Great. Thank you so much, Craig. I really appreciate the work you guys are doing. You're tremendous, as we talked last year or 2 years ago. Your work is challenging. It's extraordinary and so far ahead of the curve in terms of what should be done across the country. So I really appreciate all your work.
All right. Jeff Henske or Artie, do you have anything to comment on this?
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Yeah.
I'll just
Jeff,
add a couple of comments, and I guess maybe from the view of a developer, kind of the complications or the problems. Again, I think it's a great idea. I hope we can do more of this kind of stuff, because I think it's certainly needed in California with the power shutoffs and things like that. But again, putting on my developer hat, the complications here are many. Not the least of which, any one of these individual microgrids, I guess, is going to be, 150 kilowatts, maybe 200 kilowatts. Obviously, it depends on the size of the block that you're trying to connect. And so the incremental costs to make this a microgrid and interconnect all of the houses on the block and stuff is really going to drive up the cost, I guess, of installing this thing. And so I don't see that there's any way in the near term that this could be developed that would generate savings for the people in the neighborhood. It's kind of that simple. I mean, the cost to install this and the infrastructure that has to go with it, never mind some of the regulatory rules and stuff like that, which complicate matters. So it's something that would have to take a really hard look in the neighborhood, and everybody kind of be willing to pony up something to add the resiliency benefits. And in the long run, you probably are reducing your utility costs, but I think in the short run, it's going to cost you money. That being said, where I think is a better opportunity for a concept like this, because you can reduce some of these added costs, are in new housing developments. And if you could put this infrastructure in place, well, you're still pushing dirt around, and you don't have to worry about trying to accommodate existing infrastructure. It certainly helps save some costs. And with the California mandate of all new residential having to have solar, you've already got some mandates there that are going on. And so I think there's, the concept is great and might be better, rolled out in these new developments and new housing areas. But, if we can figure out ways to do this, to drive the economics, I think ultimately that's what most people care about. So, and to date, we've had these discussions before, what's the value of resiliency? And, I think in California, again, with the power outages in the last couple of years, people are starting to realize that being without power for 3 or 4 days is a real cost, but no one's really been able to put a number on it. So,
good.
Okay.
Jeff, let me ask you, this is Ronaldo. Let me ask you, in terms of, as a developer, are you developing new residential areas or redeveloping existing ones from your perspective?
Our company doesn't really play in the residential space. We're more in commercial and municipality kind of stuff. So I can't comment directly on that, but if this is getting to the scale that would be potentially interesting to us, 200 and above kind of kilowatts if it's a large enough neighborhood. But it's not, from the amount of effort that would have to go into this thing, unless, you can put this on, a 10-block area and each block has 200 kilowatts and you can, kind of have some kind of master contracts and everything. The homeowners association kind of level thing where you're dealing with one entity versus trying to, you know, get contracts with 20 different individual homeowners and things that, you know, these are the things that I see is going, wow, this would be complicated to get off the ground unless you have a really motivated group of buyers, of a set of homeowners association or something as a central point of contact. And it, again, in a new development, because of the mandates, it might be a lot easier. But, you know, it, again, conceptually, I think it's a great idea, but just the practical implication of it. You got to have a lot of friendly neighbors.
I'd like to have Artie join in here. Artie, what would you like to say about this?
Yes, thank you, Sierra. Yeah, I heard a lot of good things. First of all, thanks, Rinaldo. I think it's a great idea. I love it. And I guess we are very much interested to help as well. We SunTech Power is also a developer. We finance, own, and operate long-term. I agree with lots of things that I heard so far. I think it's unique. It's pretty interesting. But on the other hand, there are lots of challenges that needs to be addressed. And I guess the most challenge that I see is, besides the other things that already were mentioned by Jeff and Craig, is the financing part. So I guess like having all of this kind of acting not as one unit, there are multiple units and you have to figure out a way how to combine them. And then you have all kinds of regulations through ITC if you want to use the tax credits. And then you have all kinds of discussions through lenders that you bring in. So we as a sponsor, and we always look for leverage, and these challenges needs to be addressed here. I think there is a way. I wouldn't say that there's not a way. I mean, we are pretty close here to Half Moon Bay, and we love to see if we can help somehow in this project. But I think what Jeff said is like having so many different multiple separate units, and it needs to get financed at the end. And so anything you do on the engineering, any challenge there, there has to be also working for the ITC rules and anything else. That might make me also a little bit concerned. I guess the sizing, in terms of sizing, I'm seeing here 21 homes, 105 kilowatt. Our company is more looking at above 1 megawatt. So I would say if there is a chance to get a location that is pretty close within the next 1 to 2 miles and find some land that might be more usable or suitable for PV, that is a better chance for the whole community. And that's where the ideas of Craig came in a lot with community microgrid, I guess. This is much easier to finance. There is lots of interest from CCAs. So I guess PCE would have an interest to talk about this. Just how can we find a way that with 21 homes on their property, we can do that? That's something I don't know today, but happy to continue this discussion.
Great, thank you. This is Rinaldo again. I just wanted to comment on that because you bring up several good points. First of all, the financing part, doing it individually is interesting because many of these homeowners have, you know, invested money in their homes, and so they're retrofitting their homes now with solar on their rooftops and financing it themselves. Some are not, they're rental units, so they're not designing systems or building systems on their tops, rooftops. But there are other facilities too. For example, a housing complex that houses some 300 people that has solar but no battery storage. So they're as useless, their system is as useless as any other in this case. So just adding batteries to that kind of group would be extremely helpful from an emergency standpoint, if nothing else. So there are other opportunities, for example, farms that are right nearby where you have a tremendous amount of land available, and just cutting out some of that on a strip that's not that productive would be very useful to the next door neighbor that may be a housing complex or a fire station or a small development. So those things are also in discussion right now with various people because they make sense to be creative and create blocks that aren't necessarily just residential blocks. Could be a combination of residential and some commercial areas that combine. But again, as you say, it gets more complicated the bigger it is. So that's why I'm touting, at least to get started, have enough small units, small investors, small blocks that become the example, and that they show how they can work without a massive bureaucratic effort that takes years and years to implement. Clean Coalition has been extremely successful in areas that have been devastated because now they're down to nothing, and a new idea like theirs is just brilliant. And you can implement it very quickly to restore what was there at one time. So with existing communities, it's a little more difficult, obviously. So anyway, that's what's going on right now.
Okay, anybody else have any experience in this area? Okay. Anybody else would like to comment, or anybody who has, Craig or Jeff? Hardy?
This is Bob Perry.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, you know, this conversation, you know, is really, it's been going on for quite some time, and it really just points to the need for a restructuring of how energy is developed and the need to bring in the community early on into the process. I'm working with a group. We had proposed a bill, the Community Energy Resilience Act, that would actually require utilities to initially engage communities in an attempt to make energy part of the planning process, because if you're able to identify areas of high potential capacity or need, then you can, you know, construct a plan and engage the community as a whole in maximizing their generation, collectively. So you're not in a position of small properties having to go it alone and then prove themselves, and then hopefully more will follow on. I think this is critical, and we're drafting comments to the SB 1339 microgrid proceeding concerning PG&E's community microgrid enablement program to bring that point home, is that utilities can't draft their plans and then go to the community. They need to engage the community early on and actually learn from the community and find out what their needs are and what the best solutions are. That's my comment.
Okay. Yeah. Plena, is that you online here at 703? And anybody who wants to speak again, you have to do a 4 and a star on your phone in order to unmute your line. So let me know. I'm trying to track down that 703-989-7639 number.
This is Craig. I'm going to chime in again.
Okay,
Rinalda,
sure.
The Clean Co. has developed a set of guidelines that we call the Electrification and Community Microgrid Ready guidelines. Those are available on the Clean Coalition website. You know, just search for ECMR, right? Electrification Community Microgrid Ready, ECMR. And those guidelines are intended to be used by developers as well as by municipal permitting authorities to streamline solar microgrids, as well as the ability for those solar microgrids to tie into bigger microgrids, right? Whether it's with a neighbor through a private tie line, or whether it's through the distribution grid when more robust community microgrids are actually available to tie into. So I would I want to encourage you to keep moving. And, there are players out there that want, there's a lot of players out there that just do residential. You're in Half Moon Bay. I can recommend an amazing solar installer that's in Santa Cruz, so really nearby, Sandbar Solar. I'm happy to make an introduction to you. They have a solar microgrid that is, they've cut the cord, essentially. They've been forced to cut the cord. They don't have any electric service coming to their operation, which is, you know, it's a small to medium sized, you know, business operation. And they are 100% solar storage. And then they've got a very small natural gas generator that just tops them up. But 97% of the annual energy consumed on that site is from solar. And the reason that they don't have electric service is because PG&E was going to take about a year and a half to connect them. And they just said, well, screw that. We're just going to be off grid, right? But now there happened to be gas service that was available, but the electric service would have taken a year and a half to set up. But anyway, Sandbar Solar is awesome. They're of the right mindset. They know how to do microgrids. They do residential and commercial scale. So those guys would be a great partner, and they're in your neighborhood.
Great. Thank you so much, Craig. Appreciate the recommendation.
Okay. Any other thoughts here? Nobody? All right. Well, if we don't have any more comments, last chance. Norman, do you have any comments to make? Norman Lukather? Don't forget to do a 4-star to unmute your line.
You know, I'll just add one more thing because, you know, people like Ronaldo are very rare. You know, this you're talking about somebody who is entrenched in the architectural world, who also has dealt with the, you know, various permitting authorities and knows the rigmarole of going through those processes. Ronaldo, you know, thank you for what you're doing. And you know, I would love to find ways to get you involved with the Clean Coalition. You know, given your experience and given that you are kind of like me, you're a salmon that has to swim up that stream, even though it's probably causing you a whole bunch of brain damage. But you can't resist. You have to do it. So I can tell that's the kind of guy you are. And given what you're working on, you know, I'd love to find some ways to work with you. Hopefully, you know how to contact me directly. You know, I'm just craig@clean-coalition.org. So email address is super simple, but I'd love that we could get you working on some stuff with us. I'm personally based down in Santa Barbara, but the majority of the Clean Coalition team is up in the Bay Area. So you know, in your general neck of the woods.
Right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I am involved in a number of ways, and I literally can't help myself but immerse myself in challenging situations. Recently, I finished 12 schools that were integrated with solar. Again, they were not developing battery backup storage because PG&E is there, but they should think about it in the future. More critical facilities like hospitals and fire stations and city governments also need to take up their cause and pick up more solar energy as opposed to diesel fuel. As we've gone through this emergency situation and realized, you know, the diesel fuel pumps shut down when the power is out. So having diesel generators only works for so many hours, and then you stop. But the other thing is, interestingly enough, I'm working with a client right now, a corporate client that is in a rented leased facilities, and they would like to do more solar. But their limited roof space and outdoor space wouldn't allow them to meet their requirements. But across the street is another commercial environment where they have huge parking lots, a shopping center. You know, if they partnered with them in some way to get parking solar shade structures, they could power not only their community but the shopping center itself. So there are opportunities for joining together in creative ways to create independent islands of power supply and fill the demand. These are just things that are starting to pop up, and they haven't been around for very long as an idea. So these are all great opportunities for expansion.
It's the era.
No, go ahead. Who is it now?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, so I had any comments. Only a couple of quick ones. We did bid several years ago on a microgrid for a regional hospital in Africa. What happened is, number one, we didn't win. Number two, they pulled the RFP, so that didn't work. But there are some real opportunities over there if we can find financing. As far as solar here, I'm trying to concentrate more on the larger systems on brownfields, basically on landfills. And I just sent you an email in that regard again from yesterday's presentation. So, but what they're doing in California and other places that are a little bit more advanced, I think, than Maryland, if I could use that word, I think it may be easier from my perspective to work with jurisdictions on larger systems if they're cost beneficial. I think a larger system, if it benefits the city, is going to be easier, at least for me, to deal with than trying to pull together a community system of several homes. But that's just my perspective. I'm sure other people are more assertive in that direction. Thank you.
Any comments about that? Hardy?
Yeah, I guess we already said so many different things. I think I'm really interested to continue helping in this project and see if we can find some opportunities to support these ideas. I mean, as I said before, we are very much interested in these thoughts and try to bring the right stakeholders to endeavors. I think the CCAs are very much listening at the moment at all these PSPS events that happened last year, and so they want to do things that they can prevent it. So I'm happy to give it a try, and I'm just glad, Rinaldo, if you want to continue talking to us, you have my contacts, please contact me, and let's see how we can support.
This is John Motlock, and I'm curious if any of you have any experience with the mobile power stations for the very small-scale applications and the notion of actually mobile battery movement in periods of crisis.
This is Craig Lewis. I'm not aware of any mobile battery solutions, but in the Santa Barbara region, we are very well aware of Southern California Edison, which provides the service to City of Santa Barbara and you know, this portion we're the northernmost portion of Edison's service territory, and then it turns into PG&E just north of us. And for this area, and I think it's pretty standard for most of the utilities, they'll roll in diesel generators. So we've done a lot of analysis on how to preempt the need for the diesel generators by installing a certain chunk of solar and storage, or you could do it with just storage alone, but you'd have a much bigger chunk of storage that you would need if you didn't have solar attached to it. And by the way, those diesel generators that they roll in, just because you need to know what you're kind of fighting against, so you need to know what the size of them are. You know, they're 2 megawatt sized diesel generators, sometimes 1.5 megawatts. They're almost all, you know, the vast majority of them, 80-90% of those diesel generators are 2 megawatts in size. So you can just do the math, depending on where your location is, how many hours of comparable, you know, support do you want. You know, you just take 2 megawatts multiplied by however many hours. And then, of course, if you've got contribution from solar every day, you can take your worst weather day and figure out how much solar you can generate. And then you can just do the math of every 2 megawatt diesel generator can be avoided by deploying this much solar and storage combined together.
Right. Well, one of the things that we were looking at potentials were in poor communities and developing countries, this kind of thing. But we were looking at not the from the microgrid up in scale, but we were looking at things smaller than the typical microgrid and looking at opportunities. And I know one of the things we were seeing were mobile power stations that generated energy and stored it on mobile batteries, and it was in that 600 kilowatt range. It wasn't diesel, it was all solar energy and mobile batteries that could be moved from place to place. And that's the reason why I was asking, because it seems like on these very small applications, it may be a mobile battery rather than full-scale microgrid as we're thinking about. But I just asked that question.
Well, I can add to that. This is Ronaldo again. I can add a little story to that. Most recently, when we had a scheduled power outage here in Half Moon Bay, and it was out for quite a while, a life was actually saved. A young girl could not breathe without her ventilator and her oxygen pump, and the fire department brought one of those mobile units in, a small one, like a briefcase, to power her, and that was saved her life. I mean, literally, they were able to bring that in within minutes to power her up, but it was a solar power generator, as opposed to setting up, you know, a gas or diesel generator outside and try to get inside.
The one I'm actually most familiar with is a machine or a truck that moves from place to place. That in the applications that are most common, like for military bases where they have concern about being able to bring in diesel, et cetera, for how to convert a military base over to a kind of a mobile power station system. And so it's at a larger scale of what you're talking about, but at a smaller scale than what most of the people on the panel are talking about. That's why I was asking.
Okay.
Okay, any other comments here?
Yeah, this is Bob Perry again. You know, just to kind of echo in on some of these comments, PG&E in their resiliency proceedings made temporary generation kind of the centerpiece of their proposed program. They had $135 million dedicated to a make-ready program, which basically would retrofit substations to accept connection from mobile generators, diesel generators, and then another $173 million for the actual generators. They've had to walk that back, and the proposed decision has limited their temporary generation program to 1 year. I see a role for mobile generation as long as you're using zero carbon technologies like fuel cells or batteries or something. I think it could be useful to kind of help buttress existing DERs in a given area. But, you know, the utilities, you know, immediately go to diesel, and that's the real problem. But there's been a lot of pushback.
Okay. Any other thoughts here?
Well, this is Ronaldo, and I would like to thank everybody for their contributions here. I've learned quite a bit, and I hope you appreciate everybody's comments as well. Thank you so much.
Yes, thanks everybody for coming. It was an interesting discussion, and I hope, Ronaldo, that you were able to get something out of this and at least understand a little bit more about some directions you might think about moving forward in. So thanks to the panel, Artie and Jeff, Craig, for coming, and all the rest of you for the contributions you made today. And look for emails.
Get in touch if you want to collaborate.
We will. I'll be sending an email out with a recording link in it and the contact information for the people who are on the panel, so you can get in touch with those folks. All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, Sierra.
Thanks, Sierra.
Thank you, Sierra.
All right. Bye-bye.
I know. Yeah, bye.
Bye.